Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers, airing weeknights at 12:35, 11:35 Central on NBC, right after The Tonight Show.
President Donald Trump faced a nationwide backlash at a second straight weekend of massive protests after issuing a ban on refugees and visitors from seven majority Muslim countries that was not only cruel and unnecessary, but apparently very poorly thought out. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. In his first week as president, Trump did very little to assuage the concerns of the majority of voters that did not support him. In fact, throughout the campaign, and now as president, all he has ever really offered to ease people's minds was this vague platitude.
I have a very big heart.
I actually have a big heart.
I do have a big heart.
I do have a big heart, or as my doctor calls it, enlarged. Also, people who actually do have a big heart don't walk around bragging about it. I don't remember Mother Teresa constantly going, "This is so nice of me, right?" But okay, Trump says he has a big heart. Let's see that big ol' heart in action.
President Trump signing a new executive order tonight. He says he's keeping out terrorists, but is it a Muslim ban?
What does this order do? It temporarily bars all refugees from entry into the U.S. It suspends U.S. visas, and this is all centered around seven predominantly Muslim countries.
The nations impacted by the order so far: Sudan, Somalia, Libya, Iraq, Iran, Yemen, and Syria. Refugees from Syria are indefinitely banned. People from the other six nations stop for 90 days.
So Trump indefinitely banned refugees fleeing the horrors of a civil war in Syria, and he also blocked visa holders and even legal green card holders from seven majority Muslim countries. Although when Trump first announced the order at a signing ceremony on Friday, he read it aloud like he was seeing it for the very first time.
And this is the protection of the nation from foreign terrorist entry into the United States. We all know what that means. Protection of the nation from foreign terrorist entry into the United States. That's big stuff.
Hey, man, it's not comforting to us when you seem shocked by the stuff you're signing. That's the way people look before they sign the injury waiver on American Ninja Warrior. It's like when you were a little kid and once a month your dad would read your bedtime story instead of your mom. Wow, so the wolf just blew the house down. That is weird. A day after signing the order, Trump was asked how it was going and had this to say.
It's working out very nicely. You see it at the airports. You see it all over. It's working out very nicely.
Okay, he seems confident. Let's check into those airports and see how nicely everything's working out.
President Trump's executive order has caused chaos at airports with people being turned away, some even detained.
I'll quote this one official saying, "Nobody has any idea what is going on."
This protester says they were told three different things by Homeland Security officers.
One said, "No, your family member won't be able to get in." Another one said, "Iran is not our friend." And another one said, "I haven't watched the news. What's going on?"
How do you work at an airport and not see the news? They have CNN on every flat surface and a Hudson News every 30 yards. Have you also never had a Cinnabon? The order created confusion and chaos at airports across the country and resulted in the detention of over 100 people, including legal U.S. residents who had green cards. In fact, in an especially cruel twist, the ban resulted in the detention of an Iraqi who had worked for a decade as an interpreter for the U.S. military in Iraq. And even after being detained at JFK for 18 hours, he had nothing but positive things to say about America.
Caught in the confusion over President Trump's extreme vetting order, Hamid Darwish, the Iraqi interpreter for the U.S. military, detained for some 18 hours at JFK, even though he had a valid visa, released only after he got a waiver from the executive order.
What do you think of America?
America is the greatest nation, the greatest people in the world.
Think about that. He was detained for 18 hours at JFK, and he still loves America. If you can spend more than 2 hours at JFK without losing your you should get automatic citizenship. But okay, fine. There was one mistake. Aside from that one mishap, the Trump administration was laser-focused on the kinds of people who pose a clear and obvious threat to national security, right?
Now, another person that's been caught in the travel ban confusion and the chaos is a 75-year-old Iranian woman in L.A. Now, the elderly grandmother wound up being detained for several hours before her release to the family that was waiting for her.
She has a green card. She's had a green card since 1997.
Since 1997.
Yeah, so it's not new.
Now, as for what she would say to President Trump, she says, do something right.
Yeah, I think I speak for everyone when I say, I'm with grandma. But in a way, Trump did accomplish something truly remarkable. He managed to spark yet another round of massive nationwide protests for the second time in just the first week of his presidency. And people are willing to go to places to protest. Last week it was parks, this week it was airports. Next week people are gonna march for gay rights at the DMV. The tone of the protests made clear that these were not fleeting, spontaneous gatherings, but organized resistance that will not go away anytime soon. As this sign made clear, first they came for the Muslims, and we said, not today, mother A sign, I should note, that was clearly purchased at Samuel L. Jackson's Sign Emporium. They'll put a mother on your sign. Almost as troubling as the actual substance of this order was how sloppy and confusing the process for putting it together apparently was. Federal agencies and officials were caught off guard. And ultimately, because of that confusion, a judge finally ordered a stay, stopping all deportations, saying in a statement we're likely to hear a lot of for the next 4 years, quote, I think the government hasn't had a full chance to think about this. Trump should be the first president that legally has to count to 100 before taking action. Not because he'll think better of it, but because he'll forget what it is.
I want to shoot Rosie O'Donnell into space. 100, 99, turn on Morning Joe. 98, turn it up, I can't hear Mika. 97, what am I counting for? What's going on here?
But it's worth stepping back here and putting this into context. In just the first week of his presidency, Trump has dropped to record low approval ratings, had two straight weekends of massive nationwide protests, and lost a court battle over a sloppy and discriminatory executive order. Even Trump's staff seemed confused and uninformed about the order. White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus, for example, directly contradicted himself within minutes of the question of whether the order would affect legal U.S. residents who hold green cards.
As far as green card holders moving forward, it doesn't affect them.
This order does not impact any green card holders from these seven countries?
Well, of course it does.
Does this affect green card holders? No, yes, it doesn't. Not. I don't know how I can't be any clearer. And then there's the question of whether this executive order is just a Muslim ban by another name. One of the key questions in the court battle to come is whether it's basically just a way to ban Muslims without doing that explicitly. Trump insisted it was not. But over the weekend, Trump advisor Rudy Giuliani seemed to admit that that's exactly what it is.
When he first announced it, he said Muslim ban. He called me up. He said, put a commission together. Show me the right way to do it legally. And what we did was we focused on, instead of religion, danger. The areas of the world that create danger for us.
Rudy, you're not supposed to say that out loud. Rudy's the kind of guy who would send a girl a dozen roses with a card that says, I'm hoping these will make you want to sleep with me. And then there's the fact that Trump openly and explicitly said he would prioritize Christian refugees over Muslim refugees. Trump's policy of discriminating by religion has even been denounced by major Christian groups. But, I mean, who are you going to side with, them or a guy who talks about God like this?
Who is God to you? What are some of your thoughts on this? Clearly, you're a smart man. You're a smart businessman. You've contemplated this before, or have you contemplated
it? I'd say God is the ultimate. You know, you look at this. You look at this incredible. Here we are in the Pacific Ocean. Mm-hmm. How did I ever own this? I bought it 15 years ago. I made one of the great deals, they say, ever, this piece of land. I have no mortgage on it, as you, I will certify and represent to you.
We'll see that.
And I was able to, you know, buy this and make a great deal. That's what I want to do for the country, make great deals. We have to bring it back. But God is the ultimate.
Tell you about God? Sure, I'd love to. Long story about myself, God. It's only been a week. I mean, I think when it comes to business, you have God, and then I'm just a little bit above him.
It's only been a week, but the Trump administration has already revealed itself to be a government of incompetent authoritarians with nothing but contempt for many of the basic constitutional principles this country has cherished since its founding. I think it's safe to say if things keep going like this, then Samuel L. Jackson's gonna clean up everybody. This has been A Closer Look. Our first guest tonight is a two-time Academy Award-winning actor and director you know from legendary roles in films such as Raging Bull, Heat, and Goodfellas. He stars as a stand-up comic looking to make a comeback in The Comedian, which is in theaters Friday. Please welcome back to the show, Robert De Niro. Welcome back.
Thanks.
Very excited. Yeah. By the way, it's very hard for me to picture you cheering like that for anyone. When you were young, was there anybody that you, if they had walked out, you would have cheered like that?
No.
Yeah. I can't even picture you, like, cheering. Do you cheer at sporting events?
No.
Yeah. Do you enjoy them? Do you like watching them?
No.
Yeah, okay. Well, that would mean the cheering would be very out of place. I want to get out of here! I couldn't believe that. Is it true that's the first time you worked with Danny DeVito? You've known him forever.
Yes, I've known Danny forever, but it's the first time we actually worked together.
The scenes with him are incredibly funny throughout the film. It must be nice if you've known him long enough that you weren't actually... You must have known it'd be great to work with him.
Yeah, no, I mean, it just never happened, and... Actually, Taylor Hackford, the director, was saying, let's get Danny. I said, oh, great, let's do it. Great, great.
It's really fun. So you play an old stand-up comedian trying to make
older,
a comeback. Older. Because there are older. There are people older than you in this movie.
They look terrible.
You look great.
I like
how did you come up with this idea? Because this sort of came from you and a couple other people, right?
I was thinking the idea of playing a comedian. I have many comedian friends. I love comedians. And I thought, you know, it's a chance to play a part where you can theoretically do anything, say anything, and it'll be funny and clever and this and that. And that's what you say. It's like telling somebody you got a great idea for a script and it'll be this and it'll be that, but then you got to do it.
Yeah.
So that's the difference. But so we finally did what we did and did the movie after many... iterations and a few different directors and so on, it became what it was. So I hope it was.
And okay. And you, this of course speaks to your preparation as an actor, but you actually went and did some stand-up, yeah?
I did. Yeah, I worked with Jessica Kirsten and Louis Friedman, and I'd work at the Comedy Cellar, and not with an audience, with people around or some of the crew and this and that. I didn't do as much really. Of audience work, which is hard.
Yeah.
That's really...
Well, it would be very hard for you, let's say on a normal night at the Cellar, if they said, we have a surprise for you, it's Robert De Niro. I don't think you'd get a true read on how good a job you were doing.
Unless after, like somebody said, you got a minute after that, if you don't, you know, because everybody's with who's ever playing, they wouldn't be there if they weren't good. But they could maybe be... getting a little, dying a little bit, maybe here and there, you'd see, you know, people kind of waiting for the, you know, better stuff to come along. In my case, if I did, I came in, they're all with me, I said a joke or two, and then after that, I just kind of didn't know what I was doing. It'd be over.
Yeah, it would be. Is that terrifying to you, the idea of bombing on a stand-up stage?
Yeah, I mean, in that situation, when you're trying to be funny and people are not responding. In fact, when we were shooting...
Been there, by the way.
I mean, yeah. when we were shooting some scenes, we had the extras there, and so I'd tell the jokes, you know, a couple of times. And then after the second time, like, they didn't really, you know, it was like, okay, so it's not. And I told the director, I said, something's wrong. I said, maybe ask everybody to be very responsive, because otherwise it doesn't give me anything, and I feel like I am bombing,
right.
I am. At least they're acting, you know, they're making me feel good. Even if they don't mean it, just do it. So that's what happened.
The last time you were here, you mentioned you know a lot of comedians, and you had the Don Rickles roast. That was in 2014,
yeah.
You and Martin Scorsese. How long have you known Don Rickles?
I've known Don since we did Casino, which was done about 22 years ago.
And one of the things about being, you sort of play this legendary comedian, but you also, in the film, were on a television show, you have a catchphrase. So everybody's coming up to your character and asking to hear the old catchphrase. That must sort of ring true to something that happens in your life all the time.
Not a lot, but sometimes people will ask me to do that.
Yeah. I would feel like people would do it to you more than they'd ask you to do it.
Yes, that's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Well, I know we've talked...
Well, they'll ask me, write it on a glossy or something like that, or say it on an iPhone or somebody.
That must excite you.
It's
weird to me that someone that is a fan of yours, it's very funny to me that they would be a fan of yours and not think that you would hate that. Like, hey, my mom's on the phone. Will you say, are you talking to me?
I'd say, no, I won't say that, but I'll talk to your mother.
Oh, that's nice.
That, yeah.
And is that fun to do?
Yeah, I like talking to people. I don't mind doing that. I like it. People appreciate it. I know that they really appreciate it, and I understand that.
Well, it's nice. I do conversations with people who are fans. It's so lovely.
Yeah.
And oftentimes those moments are wasted trying to get a memento, a photo, because then there's less time to talk. And so it's nice when that actually has a chance to happen.
Right, right, right.
Harvey Keitel is in the film
as well. Yes, Harvey.
And Harvey actually is in one of the scenes is asking you to do your catchphrase. And that must be weird considering you've been in so many films with him over the years.
Yeah, no, it was good. I liked that scene a lot, and Harvey was great, and it was fun to do, you know, good to work with an old friend, and we're comfortable with each other. You know, it's all great.
Well, one of those great roast scene in the film that has some real comics as well, and one of the things that happens is the person who's getting roasted passes away during the roast.
Yes.
And your character is sad, but not for the reason you think.
No, I didn't get my best lines out.
And I do know a lot of comedians where that would be the case.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay. Sometimes, even in the face of tragedy, the first thing they think is, well, that ruins that joke for me.
Right.
I can't do that anymore. You also are doing The Bronx Tale, Broadway.
Yes, I co-directed it with Jerry Zaks. Jerry really did the heavy lifting, but yes, we did it. I always thought it'd be a terrific musical. So.
And is that something from the very beginning that when you, how long after you sort of conceived it as a film did you think? Oh,
I thought a few years, 6 years, 5 years later, I think it was, I talked to Chaz and asked him if he would, what about a musical and come up with any music. And he brought some stuff that somebody had written. It wasn't very good. And I just sort of lost interest. And I realized then we did it about 2-3 years ago. And I was talking with Tommy Mottola and Chaz and Jane Rosenthal. I was saying, well, Chaz, we still let you do it. I said, but bring that music I heard those many years ago, and also just what is the? And he mentioned that he had done something himself. I said, well, let me hear what you did, and I should have thought of it then, because what he did was his own voice and was much more bright and interesting. Though finally we were trying to figure out how to do it, and finally we went in a more in a traditional way with. Alan Menken writing the score and so on, and then the music, which is terrific. But anyway, that's what we're trying to find another way with music, but we wound up doing what we did.
Fantastic. I can't wait to see it. You've been a fairly outspoken critic of Donald Trump, it's safe to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he's aware of it, right?
I imagine.
He's noticed, yeah. He pays attention to stuff like that. Mm. But you wrote a letter... in support to your friend Meryl Streep after the Golden Globes.
Yes.
Did you write it directly to her? How do you contact Meryl Streep?
I call her.
You call her? Okay, great.
But I didn't. I emailed that to her, and I also emailed another personal from me to her. That was like a thing to her for people to see. And I just sent her another little email
that's
between
great.
Us.
And that's like Oscar winners. You just have each other's emails.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. It would be great if the Oscars were also phones. You could just pick up and say,
yeah,
get me Meryl.
There you go.
I guess this was this the night before the inauguration that you were at a rally reading fake tweets that you had written?
No, was it the night? Yeah, it was the night before. Yeah.
So you went on stage at a protest rally, and you had written some. These are, by the way, this is very likely that Donald Trump would eventually write these about you.
Could be, sure.
De Niro's career is a disaster. He was passed over for Godfather 4 and Magnificent 7. Pathetic. De Niro should get back his Oscars. Voting was rigged. There's only one true raging bull, and that's Vladimir Putin. See that?
There you go.
An extremely credible Nobu. That's a sushi restaurant
yes,
here.
Yes, yeah.
And
yeah.
You're a co-founder of Nobu.
Yes.
Because otherwise people will be wondering, why is that a slam on Robert De Niro?
Exactly.
Famous fishmonger, Robert
yeah.
De Niro.
Yeah.
An extremely credible source told me that Nobu uses raw fish in their sushi. And the portions are small, sad. One day, hopefully you'll avoid the real ones, but the fake ones are a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be, we live in interesting times, right?
We sure do.
Thank you so much for being here. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks.
Robert De Niro, everybody, the Comedians in Theater Friday in the Bronx Tale. The musical is playing on Broadway at the Longacre Theater. We'll be right back.
Late Night Podcast is available every Wednesday and Friday on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you like what you hear, please take a moment to leave us a rating and review. Now, back to the show.
Hey, everybody. This is Amber Ruffin.
That was a very natural intro.
I'm here with Jennifer Hagel, and we're Talking Shop with Jenny and Amber. What are we talking about today? Working at late night.
Hi, I'm Jenny Hagel. I'm here with Amber Ruffin.
Oh.
Yeah.
The counter intro.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
We're doing two simultaneous interviews, rival interviews at the same time.
That would be great.
Yeah. How's your day going so far?
Last week I had everything in the world to do. Today I have less than nothing to do. I turned in monologue jokes. That's how little I have to do today.
We all enjoyed your Pam Grier joke.
Oh. How did you know it was me? How's your day going?
It's good. I think my work life is more consistent. Yours tends to go up, 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 and then down and up and down, whereas mine tends to be kind of like a more steady, since I'm on the monologue team.
Yeah.
So I have like rolling deadlines every day, whereas you have like flurry of activity. Then no activity,
then
flurry.
Freedom, baby. Yep. I could be anywhere right now.
That's right.
No, if I have sketch on or a something on, then I have rules. Otherwise, I'm just a lawless pony galloping through the office doing whatever I please.
Which I feel like both, I feel like also our job roles suit our personalities.
Yeah.
Because you kind of are a lawless pony as a person.
That's true.
Whereas I'm very much a strict. Like, I have a schedule
on
weekends.
You have a checklist.
Oh, I set my alarm on weekends. I always have a to-do list. I'm, like, a person who likes rules. So it's good for me to be on monologue team, because then I know, like, I get in at 9 a.m., I start writing jokes. At 1:30, I turn them in. From 1:30 to 2, I go get food. At 2 o'clock, we have mono meeting. I love it. I'm like a little kid at daycare who likes to know, like, when is story time? When is nap time?
Aw, that's sweet.
Yeah.
Then you found exactly your favorite thing.
We did. We both found our exact right perfect jobs.
Yay!
So can I ask you a question?
Okay.
My favorite
but
thing.
But people can hear what you're about to say, okay. FYI.
Can I ask you a prime? What's your PIN? Your ATM PIN. No, my favorite thing ever is, because I feel like before this, Ross was like, talk about like stuff you've done that's gone well. But my favorite thing ever is to talk about things that failed.
Oh, yeah.
What is your favorite joke lately that you wrote that crashed and burned?
My favorite joke I wrote that crashed and burned. I don't know. I write a lot of sketches that crash and burn on the regular.
What was there a pitch that you loved that you that crashed and burned that you thought was like just really robbed?
What was
that people
my
didn't
last
recognize your genius?
Pitch? Oh, my last pitch I thought was going to be great. And then it played to a room of silence. Where Seth goes, oh my God, you guys, this weekend was the friggin' Muslim ban and this and that. And then a strange lady stands up in the audience and goes, he did? He banned Muslims? And then Seth goes, yeah, he did. And then she gets up and goes, bingo, bingo. And she has like horrible things. Bingo. You know,
she has a bingo card that has all the things that could have possibly gone wrong in the first week of the Trump presidency.
Yeah. And they all did. And she wins bingo. And she gets prizes that can help her, you know, move to Canada.
She gets a Canadian passport. She gets.
Perhaps the wasn't thought all the way through. What's your favorite joke?
What is my? You know, like I have that one monologue joke that I love.
Your Hello Kitty joke.
Yep. Whew, I feel like I love that thing.
Tell
there,
it.
There was one recently that I've had that I thought, oh, this might be the new Hello Kitty joke, but now I'm blanking on it, so I'll tell the Hello Kitty. But every once in a while, I'll have one that I feel like was a monologue joke that I wrote that was genius and nobody else recognizes my genius.
Ha.
And I'll hold it in my heart like it's like my precious baby. and I'll remember it for months until like a new one goes to take its place. What is, oh, the Hello Kitty joke was, a new Hello Kitty themed cafe opened in South Korea this week. And in a cruel twist of fate, the one person who wants to eat their most has no mouth. And then there would be a picture of Hello Kitty. Because if you ever look directly at Hello Kitty, which I feel like nobody ever notices, then it's just an eye, two eyes and a nose, but she has no mouth. And I feel like this is like a mind-blowing revelation in the form of a punchline. I like it so much that I pitched it two times. It was rejected twice, and I'm still convinced that I'm in the right. America does not want that joke, but I believe that they do.
Oh, well.
I'm like a mom with a food on a spoon. I'm like, open up, you want this joke?
No, no.
Nobody wants it.
We ate it. I like it.
Thank you. It's all taste. It's all a matter of.
I like Hello Kitty.
Yeah. Everything's subjective.
Agreed.
It's hard for us what to talk else? On these microphones because we talk nonstop all day, every day.
It is weird, eh?
It's weird.
But you got to run through what we talk about. You can't really be talking about that right now.
Because I feel like what people don't know is 2017. So we've been friends for 11 years.
Yeah.
People don't know that.
We started knowing each other. We became friends at Second City Denver in
2006, I think.
Yep. In 2006.
Yep.
That was 500 years ago.
We were.
Don't correct me if I'm wrong, but it was 500 years
ago. I think that tracks. I think mathematically that tracks.
Yes. And it was the most fun. Remember, we were young and fun.
We had nothing to do.
Can you imagine us young and fun? We were, though.
Yeah. I can't imagine myself young or fun.
Me either.
But boy, did we have a good time. Because we didn't, once we wrote our show, because Second City is like a two-act sketch show. So the first 2 months that you're there, you are in rehearsals all day, writing all day, performing all the time, honing things. But then once you have opening night, then you just don't do anything. You don't have to be anywhere any day until, every day you have nowhere to be till 7:30 at night is your call time for an 8 o'clock curtain. So just imagine a bunch of people in their 20s with nowhere to be till 7:30 at night.
Nowhere to be. We stayed at friggin' free apartment, so we had all this extra money
to blow on. All we did
blow
was to blow
on garbage.
Drinks. That's all we did was buy drinks. It was a pretty great. I was there for 6 months. I bought so many drinks.
I bought a lot of drinks. I bought Band Hero.
You did. You were so good at that.
Ooh,
I'd never seen
me, Guitar Hero.
I'd never seen Guitar Hero till I showed up at your apartment the first time, and my mind was blown. And it was a new game, and you were already on expert level.
It was the most fun
when I saw
I've
it the first time.
Had. I love that game.
You played that
so
plastic
much.
Guitar better than I've ever seen a human being
Woo!
Play a real guitar.
Also, I had never heard any of those songs before.
Yeah.
There is very little crossover
between old 70s rock songs and black woman in her 20s. Yeah, I believe it. Because I barely know those songs.
Yeah, it was like, I don't know what these songs are, but I can play the ass off of them. I loved that game so much.
Oh, yeah.
Then I recently bought Rock Band. I'm old and it's not fun anymore.
Yeah. The drums aren't as satisfying as you want them to be.
No.
You want this to sound like you're a drummer and it sounds like it sounds like sad plastic on plastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. I mean, it's fun.
It doesn't fulfill your dreams in the way you want it to.
Wait, are we sponsored by Rock Band?
We might be. This is becoming a long commercial.
You know
for
what?
Rock
Band is good and fun. And I think it's fun to play. And it's good for you.
We played the shit out of Guitar Hero, though.
We really did.
We really did.
Such nerds. And that's us at our most fun.
It is. Also, I'll never forget the one time you called me and you were like, Mac is giving free makeovers as long as you buy $40 worth of stuff. Have zero interest in makeup. Was like, let's go. Because I think at that point we'd done everything there was to do in Denver. I did everything. I toured Unsinkable Molly Brown's house. I went on a tour of the Federal Reserve.
Jeez.
No, the Mint. I went on a tour of the U.S. Mint.
Wow. Oh, I went.
Yeah. Oh, I organized all kinds of crap because I we just had so much free time.
We went on a Whitewater rafting. We went to the Coors Brewery.
Yeah.
We really did everything.
I signed up for every tour. I ran multiple 5Ks.
Did?
Yes, which honestly took, because the air is so thin, it took me forever to be able to do that. I had to go on these like tiny little baby runs.
Oof. You had a whole life.
I did. We had so much time. Yeah. It's amazing we don't all speak seven languages and like play nine instruments from all that free time. Oh, I took drum lessons.
I didn't do shit.
My favorite is when I called to sign up for you, because I'd always wanted, I was like, oh, it'd be so neat to play drums. And so I was like, well, now's the time. I got extra money and extra time.
Yeah.
So I called to sign myself. Like, I was like, oh, you guys teach drum lessons, blah, blah, blah. Okay, what times are available? What's the rate? All this stuff got on my calendar. We booked this thing. I have this whole conversation with this guy. And then we was like, okay, great. So Tuesday, 7 p.m. And this is for your son? Nope, just me. A 29-year-old lady trying to learn the drums. Totally thought it was for like my tiny son.
Oh, I like it.
Mm-hmm. But I felt bad for him because I was like, no, they're for me. He's like, oh, right. Cool.
And then he felt real bad.
He did feel bad.
That's all I want. For that guy to feel bad. What else? Jenny,
man. What else we gotta talk about? We have a sketch due today at 6:30.
Tomorrow at 6:30.
Oh, today's only Tuesday.
Today's only Tuesday, baby.
I was like sitting here sweating.
You could goof off for the rest of the day.
Well, don't mind if I do then.
Enjoy me. Me trying to get Jenny to goof off is real hard work. But sometimes I get it done.
We are a little bit odd couple-y.
We are odd couple-y.
Aren't we?
And darn it, the odd couple already came back, or else Jenny, it would have been perfect.
We
wouldn't have had to write anything down. We could just live.
We are such jerks.
We are the exact odd couple.
If I ever text Amber on the weekend and say, what are you doing? It's always having a seat. You always say, I'm having a seat. You're always on your like seventh episode of some binge watch.
Yeah.
And I'm always like on my seventh thing on a to-do list.
Yeah. No dice. Weekends are for sitting down and seeing how many margaritas you can have. Yep. The answer is all of them.
Another secret about Amber is that she is a child whisperer. You are a kid whisperer. Every kid loves you.
I like kids.
Yeah.
You know who doesn't like me? I would say 7 to 11 month old white children who have never seen a black person before. They
do you encounter that in New York, though? I would think that'd be really hard in New York for them to not have seen people of every color.
It happens.
That's not good.
It happens. I mean, what are you going to do? I don't know. I probably did the same thing when I was a kid.
Yeah. I have a 3-year-old son, and he's obsessed with Amber. He's obsessed with you.
I love him.
I know. You like to come over and make him rile him up.
I just think all children should be hitting people in the face as hard as possible.
Amber shows up to my house one time. I'm not talking to you now. I'm talking to whoever's listening.
It's probably me. It's also me.
Do you think we're going to listen to this? I'll just listen to it sometime when you're out of town and you can't hang out with me. No, because I remember you came over that one time at 7:30 or 8. You came over right before bedtime and you walked in and you hadn't even seen him yet. And you're like, I just want you to know I'm here to make your child act insane. And then you walked in and you guys just started chasing each other around and screaming. And then Amber and my son played this game where they laid on the floor and just hit each other in the face and screamed.
It's real fun.
And then finally I was like, buddy, okay, just heads up. In 5 minutes, we're going to brush our teeth. And then you guys scream some more. And then we went brush our teeth and you came back and screamed some more. And then the next morning I was like, hey, buddy, was that fun last night to see Amber? And he goes, yes. And I said, was it fun to play Scream? And he's very little. He's what I already say. He's 3. He was like 2.5 at this point. I go, was it fun to play Scream? And he goes, that game a little bit fun and a little bit sad. I said, why was it sad, buddy? He goes, it's sad when you make me stop and brush my teeth. The only part of the game that was sad was when he had to stop hitting you.
Oh, that's great.
Everything else he loved.
They're getting hit in the face. You forget.
Yeah.
Kids have it right.
Getting
it's
chased.
It's terrifying when somebody hits you in the face, and it's so fun.
Yeah. Getting hit in the face, getting chased.
Getting chased, it's great.
Having somebody jump out and surprise you.
Yeah. Me and the baby, we're right.
Dude, he loves you.
Everyone else is an insane person.
Nope.
You play the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
What else don't people know about you? Ooh, let's tell each other secrets.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Okay,
we'll go secret for secret.
Okay.
You just told one of mine. I play the guitar.
Yes.
You like to make a big pot of something and then just eat it for 3 days.
Oh my God, it's the best thing to do. You are a huge nerd turd. Just kidding. Well, I'm not kidding at all. You absolutely are. What do you do? You are single.
I am.
That's a good secret.
That's true.
Woo!
That's true. Get at me, ladies.
Jenny is single. Holler at her if you are a girl who likes girls.
Amber speaks. This is not a joke. Amber speaks very fluent, very impressive Dutch.
This is not a joke. Jenny speaks very fluent, very impressive Spanish. And she also speaks Russian.
Как вас зовут?
Woot woot to you too, bud.
Wait, what else? I feel like I know a good one about you.
Jenny, you don't have a lot of good secrets.
I know. I'm such a nerd.
Because you're a nerd.
You don't have a tattoo.
Oh,
right?
Jenny, ew, no.
I didn't think so.
I mean, you know, everyone make your own choices. Jenny bought a dress for the Writers Guild Awards that she's uncomfortable with wearing because she thinks it shows too much boob. And I have never heard of such a thing. Yeah. So.
Yep. I went shopping with Amber to buy it. And then she was just like a little character, like a devil angel character. She was like a devil character on my shoulder. And being like, buy it. Buy it. Who cares?
Then I was also the devil character on her opposite shoulder.
Two devil. Yeah.
More boob.
More boob.
How could you show more boob?
Yep. And then, Amber tried on, what is the name of that store? BCBG?
Oh, yeah.
And Amber tried on a $2,000 cat suit that was covered in beads and looked like it was from space. Because I'm not a good person, I tried to get her to buy it, which is an insane
$2,000
is insane. But I was like, "Do it. Who cares?"
A $2,000 pantsuit.
It not looked like it was from outer space. You look
that
like
thing
you
was fantastic.
You look like you were in outer space and also a high-ranking military official in whatever the military forces on that planet. Like you were like from another planet, and also probably like a colonel,
probably the colonel of the sexy Marines.
The sexy interplanetary Marines.
Yeah.
I think that it was in that section. Was it interplanetary evening wear?
Yeah.
Was the section that it was in.
Exactly.
And it wasn't $2,000. It was 2,000 bleep blorps. You had to pay for it in space money.
That thing was 1,998 bleep blorps. It was too much.
Oh.
But I do think about it often.
Oh.
It was beautiful.
I'm so mad I didn't take more pictures. I have a bunch of pictures of me from the dressing room and not any pictures of you. And I'm so sad about it.
I deleted it so that I would forget it. I can't be thinking about a $2,000 cat suit.
Oh, that's like when you delete the text history of a person you were dating that you have to like. And you did it for a jumpsuit. That's amazing.
I do that.
That's so good.
I remember when I was little. Remember when you were in high school and you got a bunch of love letters?
Yeah.
I used to keep all my love letters in a shoebox, and then I didn't like the amount of time I would spend reading them, so I threw them all out.
Wow.
It's like, can't be living in the past. Got to move forward. Woo!
So here's another question. So what is another thing that you've held on for too long? I love these. Like, because I feel like in New York, you have to make a lot of choices. Your apartment's so small. And so I think, to me, it's very interesting. In the suburbs, people keep everything, or other cities. But in New York, people make very hard and specific choices about what they keep. And I feel like what a New Yorker has tells a lot about them to me.
Well, I lived in Omaha, Chicago, then Amsterdam, then Denver, then Chicago, then Amsterdam, then LA, then New York. So if it doesn't fit in my two luggages, I do not keep it. I used to have a bag of old pictures, but I'm pretty sure I threw that out.
Oh, you're kidding.
No,
oh, that hurts.
That
my
can't
feelings.
Be. Maybe I left it at mom and dad's. But I mean, hey, you don't look at it for a while.
I hear you.
I cannot hold on to anything. No. I have no loyalties.
I know.
Except to you. I love you very much.
I love you too.
What's the, what have you been holding on to?
I, for a long time. So until I started working professionally in comedy, my day job was that I was a temp. And then I would do like improv and sketch comedy at night. And, you know, when you're a temp, you have to wear, like, business lady clothes. And so I would have, like, these, like, I had, like, a few pairs of black dress, like, grown-up lady pants.
Yeah.
But there's, like, no other reason to wear them when you're, like, a comedy person. Like, I'm not wearing them on the weekends or whatever.
Yeah.
So I had this little basket. And over the years, I, like, would accumulate them. Like, one of them had, like, little pinstripes. They were, like, all, like, very, like, business lady pants. And the last thing you want to do is spend more money on a day job you don't care about. So I would just always save them, no matter how, like, worn down they got. When I got my first TV writing job, I had been a temp and I had been making $350 a week after taxes in New York City.
Oh.
I know. And then somebody called and offered me my first TV writing job. And it was so funny because they were like, they told me how much it paid. And it wasn't even like a fancy job and didn't pay a lot for TV, but anything compared to $350 a week. And I remember they were like, do you think you could accept that? And I had to make myself count to three in my head before I said yes, instead of being like, yes. So I accepted the job, but it just seemed too good to be true. And the first job was just for 3 months. It was a 3-month contract. So I folded all of my temping pants neatly and I put them in a basket in the back of my closet. And I told myself, like, okay, well, in 3 months, I'll have to start wearing these again. And then I got extended at that job, and that job, that show got renewed and renewed. And then I got another job and blah, blah, blah. I held on to those pants for 7 years.
Aww.
Because I started to be convinced that the second I threw out that basket of temping pants, yeah, then I would like have to be I would like jinx myself, and then I'd be like, I won't be able to be a TV writer anymore.
Oh yeah.
So I just threw those pants away last summer.
Oh.
I just threw them, but because then it started to become like, oh, look how far I've come. These are 7-year-old pants. That means I've like made it this far. I don't. But honestly, fully expect that at some point I'll have to temp again. And I'm prepared for it, and it's
what?
Fine.
That's not possible.
Well, you never know.
Jenny has a real background in television writing, and I don't. But Jenny has written on every MTV show?
A lot of them. A lot of them.
A good number.
The funny thing, though, is about MTV shows is that you keep getting older, and MTV audiences stay the same. So at one point, I was the head writer of a top 10 pop culture countdown show that was for people in late high school, early college. And I had drinks with a college friend who I hadn't seen in like 10 years. And he was like, so tell me what you're doing. What are you up to lately? And I told him, and there was a pause. And he just looks at me over this glass of wine. He goes, so let me get this straight. America's teenagers are being told what's cool by a 36-year-old lesbian? I was like, that is correct. Yes. Because I literally be like, number 8 on our countdown, it's Robert Pattinson. He's dreamy. Like, it was like, but that's why I know, like, when I'll write monologue jokes all the time here, where I'll be like, I think it is so good. I think it is such a good joke because it pulls together, like, you have to know, like, the name of Taylor Swift's last album plus the 3 people she dated, plus you have to also know that Drake and Meek Mill have a beef, and you have to also know that Drake has kind of always loved Rihanna and they've dated on and off but they've never been official and blah blah, and I'm pulling together like all this deep pop culture knowledge into like one punchline, and everybody here's like a pass, and also we don't get it.
I don't know any of the words you just said.
In my mind I'm like, get it, you guys get it, because Frankie's the bonus Jonas.
No. No clue. But I like that you know what all of those things
mean. It was like I studied abroad in another country, but that country was youth.
Yay. Oh, I studied abroad in another country, and the other country was Amsterdam.
That's right, you did.
Just kidding, it's a city.
Well, people are probably ready to go on with their day, and we got to get on with our job.
Well,
right?
Too bad, because I have shit to say. Just kidding. I mean, okay. Hey, everybody. That was it for What's Happening at Late Night. I'm Amber the Dog Ruffin. Roof, roof.
Wait, give me a nickname.
And I've been here with Jenny the Cheetah Wrangler Hagel.
Oh, that's a cheetah noise.
Yeah, sure. And oh, man, it's been also good to have you listen to our podcast. Tune back in at wherever you found this thing like a week from now.
And please watch Late Night with Seth Meyers.
Oh, fuck. Watch Late Night with Seth Meyers.
Bye.
Bye. That's the longest we've gone without having a drink.
For sure.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. Thanks for listening.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.